straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
You heard the lady on Second Thought, episode 115, powered by Hook'em.com and brought to you by our friends at Bud Light. Cedric Golden here with the Duck, Kirk Bowles. We have an epic podcast for you. And why is that, Mr. Bowles? Tell our listeners.
Because it's one of our favorite people in the whole world.
Oh, my God. Michelle Obama, no. Oprah, no.
Close.
J-Lo. Coast. Not J-Lo, Jay Carr.
There you go.
Jenny Carlson of the Daily Oklahoman newspaper.
Well, it's not the Daily. Isn't it just the Oklahoman?
I call it the Daily because I read it every day like USA Today.
Which is it, Jenny?
It's not the Daily, but See? It's okay if you put it in there because we're still Daily, and that's a good thing these days.
It is good being Daily. And
tell them.
Yeah.
And we're partners in crime. We have the same owners, Gatehouse Media. So,
we're under the same umbrella, which these days you need an umbrella in Austin. So I feel like even more like, you know, family with you guys right now.
I'm going to tell you, Jenny, and we're going to get to Texas, Oklahoma State coming up. I was talking to you guys off the air. I've never seen so many big people in grocery stores on the water aisle. It's refreshing.
What are you saying?
Well, I'm saying if you had just been drinking that much water all before, you probably wouldn't be as big.
I'd like to apologize for my colleague's comments.
I can speak on big people because I'm one of them, sir.
Are you drinking a lot of water?
Yes, I am. Do you haven't noticed I've lost 25 pounds over the last 6 months?
You're always wearing a coat. I never know.
Well, I got to cover up the gut. What's left of it.
But,
Are you guys in the boat that I am, that the one time somebody says you can't have something is when you want it desperately? So, like, the people there in Austin are saying, conserve your water, don't drink the water, and now, like, everybody just wants water. It's like, oh, this is the one thing I crave all the time. And as soon as they lift that ban, everybody's going to be like, all right, back to the sodas, please.
No, it's not for me. I drink whiskey all the time, and it's not affected by the water.
I do have a confession.
What?
I do have a confession.
Oh, here it comes.
I had some friends over.
Yes.
On Tuesday night.
You've got friends?
Yes.
Okay.
A weekly poker game. And one of them walks in. It's the TV sports guys.
I know.
They come in late night to my house. We play from like 11:30 p.m. to like 2 a.m. And so one guy walks into my house and he's rolling his eyes at me. And I go, why are you looking at me like that? He goes, your sprinklers are on.
Oh, my God.
No.
You could be prosecuted for that.
Wow.
I can't believe you admit that publicly. Yeah.
What does the world's oldest profession have to do with it? Oh, you said prosecuted. Oh, okay.
My God.
I live in Pflugerville.
Moving right along.
No, I live in Pflugerville.
Yes, I know.
Which is not part of the Boil Water Initiative.
It's not?
Our water in Pflugerville is clean, so if anyone wants to come over and take a bath in my house, I'm charging $5 a bath.
Or in your sprinklers.
Yeah, or run through the sprinkler. Maybe your water's so contaminated.
My friend who lives
no
in South
different.
Austin was not happy with me, so I went and turned my sprinklers
as
on.
Well you should. It's a moral good. Thing. That's it's a moral good. Thing. So.
It is a moral
But we
thing.
Digress.
You've got to support the people in Austin for crying out
Absolutely.
Loud.
Absolutely.
That's where I get my bills paid, and
exactly.
I apologize.
Respect your brothers and sisters.
The sprinklers had only been on for like a minute, so.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, I believe
my
that.
Grass looks
well,
good
let's,
right
let's
now.
Move on to some football.
Saturday night.
Big game.
Huge game.
Big game, not huge game.
It's a huge game when it's the number six team in the country going into an environment that has not always been friendly.
No.
The Oklahoma State Cowboys may be struggling, but I expect them to give Texas a real tussle. Jenny, the mullet, Mike Gundy, This is as tough as it's been for him in quite some time.
Yeah, I want to know why they're so bad.
How's he handling it? And why are they? I know you don't just replace a Mason Rudolph and a James Washington overnight, but why have the struggles been? Don't give me the moving
Will
on.
Will you get
this
to
is,
the question?
No, this is radio. This is not
print. We have one of our favorite guests
This
on.
Is conversational. You can take your time on a question
I
when
can
it's
hear
audio.
You anytime. I want to hear anything.
Quit giving me bad hand signals, because I'm going to give you one that we can't talk about. Jenny, why are they struggling?
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, it's a lot of things. I think you're right. You know, clearly replacing the stars offensively has been a thing that people have pointed to. You know, Taylor Cornelius is not Mason Rudolph, but I don't think, with the exception of the K-State game, he has not been terrible. He has not been at the top of their must-fix problems. They lost three guys on their offensive line, and that has been their biggest problem on offense. They just cannot seem to get any consistency on that offensive line. You know, one week they're blocking pretty well in the run game. The next week it's abysmal. One week they're doing okay in the pass protection. The next week it's non-existent. So they just have not been able to figure out anything consistently on the offensive line. If they could do one thing and figure it out and do it well, they might be able to, you know, game plan and scheme and figure out ways to play to those strengths, but there's just been nothing there that's been strong consistently. So that has really hampered them offensively. And then defensively, you know, they fired Glenn Spencer after last year, went to Jim Knowles, went to a different defense, and they're just really young in the secondary. They've said it in, you know, myriad ways. If they had more experienced guys who they thought were better, they'd be playing them. And right now they don't have experienced guys that can fill those spots in the secondary. And that's meant young guys with a learning curve that they're having to learn as they go. And you know how that goes in the Big 12. Not great. You know, that can lead to disaster. So it's been, you know, both of those issues have been huge, but I think it really comes down to offensive line and secondary, and they've just been, you know, a couple places that you can get exposed in the Big 12, and that has happened against teams that, you know, aren't necessarily on paper much better than Oklahoma State, lost badly at K-State, lost badly to Tech, which that loss doesn't look as bad now, but definitely not what you'd want against Tech. And then lose to Iowa State. Again, maybe doesn't look as bad, but boy, they just let Iowa State go up and down the field. So not good results for Oklahoma State in those three losses.
Yes, it's weird. I don't think it's a great year for the Big 12, but Texas and OU up near the top, which everybody likes, and the national perception. Oh, it's fine if Texas and OU is good, but I think the bottom has come up. But, you know, Baylor's better. Kansas is better. Yeah. Iowa State's better. Texas Tech's putting it together, you know. So I think that's true. You know, I look at the offensive line. They've got a bunch of 300-plus pounders. They're like two senior starters, two redshirt junior starters. Yeah. So they're older players. But like you said, they don't have that consistency. And they obviously have a great running back in Justice Hill. I think he's the best running back in the Big 12. What do you think? And do you think he's going to leave after this junior year? Stop it.
I to answer your second question first, I think it's looking more and more likely that he will leave. I didn't necessarily think that at the beginning of the year. You know, we all know that running backs only have a certain number of carries in their legs and their knees. I mean, that's the long-held belief. And so, you know, he's a guy that fits regardless of whether you're, you know, big, small, you know, at Oklahoma State, Texas, or wherever. So, you know, but I still thought he's a guy that he grew up a Cowboy fan. He was the first commitment of his recruiting class, and then he became a guy that went out and tried to get other guys to come to Oklahoma State. So the idea of being a Cowboy and playing at Oklahoma State, two things that were really important to him. And I thought that might hold some weight, but you know, they've really struggled to get him in the spots that he can make the most of his abilities this year. Obviously, the run blocking, that creates problems when you're a running back. But then they've just not had much in the way of creativity to put him out in space. He's a great pass catcher. I wrote about this actually over the weekend. He's a great pass catcher, and they're hardly utilizing that in their scheming. And so I think moving forward, you know, if they want to have some more offensive success, which I think they're going to need to just to make up for their defensive deficiencies, you need to figure out some creative ways to get the ball to Justice Hill in space, and passing him the ball on you know, short pass plays, I think is a good start. So if they can figure out some ways to get him some yards that aren't, you know, if he gets 6 yards, five of them aren't like dragging seven guys along with him. If they can figure out some ways that he can get some easier yards, maybe he thinks about coming back, but I think more and more that he's probably going to have to lean towards at least taking a good hard look at the NFL, mm-hmm. just from the standpoint of this is his third year as a starter. It means a lot of carries.
Right.
And then you add in the fact that, you know, if he looks ahead to next year, is there an obvious improvement in his situation at Oklahoma State? But what you said, Kirk, about, you know, best running back in the league, I think right now that you could probably make an argument for that. Oklahoma's got a couple guys that are pretty good. Obviously losing Rodney Anderson. David Montgomery at Iowa State has not been as good as I thought he would be.
Right.
So, you know, I think that Justice probably can make a strong argument for that. And again, you know, running backs, just they don't have a ton of years in them, so you got to take advantage of that when you can.
Yeah, I think running backs and skilled people almost always should leave early. This is job training for them, and go get a job and make your money.
Exactly. I remember Jamal Charles left, and we were shocked that he left after his junior year, and he turned out to...
Oh, you remember the tight end went to Green Bay. JerMichael Finley left.
And
you know, he had two years left.
They were like, why are you leaving? Earl Thomas leaves.
Make your money.
A redshirt sophomore. And I remember Dwayne Aquina chasing him down in the locker room after they lost to Alabama, going, Earl, we got to talk about this. You know, and Earl Thomas had made his mind up. And every one of those turned out to be the right decision because it's a money thing. It's a business. And so... I was going to ask you about Boone Pickens Stadium. I mean, I've been to many games there, and I know you've been to so many. That is a beehive. When this program is rolling, that's a beehive. The fans are on top of you. It's a real great atmosphere. Are you shocked that they haven't been able to be more competitive? I watched the West Virginia game. Iowa State goes in there and puts up 48 on them, seven sacks.
This is their first sellout, isn't that right, Jenny?
And they have, they aren't selling the tickets. Are the fans down? Because the one thing that I know is sometimes when you win every year, people are like, "This is who we are." It takes work, and the Big 12, like Kirk said, is up from the bottom, is improved.
Yeah,
what's the fan base right now? What's the mood of that fan base given these struggles?
Yeah, I'll be honest, they're pretty down. And, you know, I think this is for some fans, this is a reminder that, you know, Oklahoma State hasn't always been, a 10-win team, a bowl team. I mean, there were lean years not too long ago. I mean, and there are definitely long, you know, standing fans that have been there over the decades, and they know that, you know, the consistency that Mike Gundy has brought over the last, 12, 14, 15 years, this is a first in this program. And frankly, there aren't a lot of programs that you can look at around the country and see the kind of consistency that Oklahoma State has had. They haven't had a losing season in the last 10 years. Texas can't say that. Alabama can't say that.
Right.
I mean, there are programs that it can happen quick. You can fall. You can have a name. You can have a great run, and all of a sudden things can go sideways in a hurry. So, the fact that Oklahoma State has had that consistency, you know, I think that there's maybe a newer generation of fans that they're not as aware of where things have come from. And so it's easy to lose sight of that. But, you know, I think obviously there was an expectation that this year would not be as smooth a sailing as the last few years when you lose a guy that potentially was the best quarterback that the program has ever had. And, you know, you make that argument, was it Mason Rudolph? Was it Brandon Whedon? But still a really good long-term quarterback. You lose James Washington. You lose Marcel Aitman. Again, three offensive linemen, that aren't widely known, but if you're a fan, you're aware that those guys were important when you're talking about center, left tackle, guys that are important to the health and the well-being of your football team. Defensively lost some guys out of the secondary, Trey Flowers, Ramon Richards, who'd been there and played a long time, might not have been world beaters, but were consistent most of the time for that defense. So I think people knew that this year would be a struggle, but to see the losses to the teams that they've come to, I think it's really disappointed people. And I guess that speaks to the level of expectation that has been established. And that's the kind of thing you want. If you're building a program, you want people to expect great things, but you know, I think that there were, I think that the thing that's been maybe most interesting to watch is the way that Cowboy fans have really given Taylor Cornelius almost no rope at all in anything. I think, you know, midway through the first half of his first start, they were ready to pull the plug on him. You know, he, to me, has gotten better. Again, did not throw the ball well at K-State 2 weeks ago. That was really the first game that I think you could say he had a big hand in, you know, the problems that plagued that team in a game. But, you know, people have been so quick to say, you know, it's time to go with the true freshman, Spencer Sanders, a five-star guy coming from the state of Texas. It's time to go to Drew Brown, a graduate transfer from Hawaii. You know, they just want something else. And it's been really interesting to watch that unfold. So I don't think we're going to see a quarterback change this week. We might see a Drew Brown get in there, maybe, you know, at some point in this game against Texas, or depending how it goes. To me, the offensive line has been such a struggle. Cornelius is a 6'6", 230-240-pound guy.
That's a big
deal. He's been able to take some hits, and he's able to move around.
Yeah.
So he's been able to make up a little bit for those offensive line deficiencies. I don't know if you want to put a true freshman out there against that Texas defensive front. I just think that that could be a recipe for disaster and really some long-term, you know, psychological harm to somebody. Now, Drew Brown has played more. He's a more of a veteran guy. Maybe if the offense struggles, you might see him inserted at this point. You know, we're five games to go. The redshirt thing, mm-hmm. you know, if they work it right, they could potentially still redshirt both Spencer Sanders and Drew Brown. But I think that that has been the biggest thing for most Cowboy fans, is this quarterback situation they're very frustrated with. But the fans have not been as excited about this team ever since the Boise game. The expectation, I think, continued to rise because that was such an unexpected dominant performance from OSU. And then to see things turn so quickly once Big 12 play started, that's really been hard for people to swallow. Saturday is homecoming in Stillwater. Homecoming at OSU is something unlike most homecomings on college campuses. You know, most people say it's homecoming and it's no big deal. At Stillwater, it's a huge deal. So there will be more people on campus than any other Saturday of the year. You know, I think you'll see a lot of people that will, you know, go to the game, 7 o'clock kick. You know, looks like the weather's going to be good. I think you'll see a big crowd, a crowd that's ready to, you know, pull for their team if their team gives them something to cheer for. And so it's going to be a really interesting dynamic on Saturday night. On a weekend that is a huge deal for Oklahoma State fans.
Well, like, you look at the line, Jenny, and said it's 3 points. That's nothing, you know, in college football. And Texas has its own quarterback issues with the injury there. They may know by Thursday if Shane Buechele's going to go or Sam Ellinger's shoulder is okay. So it is up in the air. So the other thing I would ask you about, you know, Jalen McCleskey losing or leaving, I wonder what kind of effect that had on the clubhouse and the team. And then Mike Gundy had yet another spat with the media. I don't. Do you know anything about that? Does he ever have altercations with the media, or has he always been real civil?
I heard something about that. Yeah,
get out of the
past. Always been pretty even keel, from what I know. Right?
Yeah. Did that shake up the clubhouse? You know, McCleskey leaving like he did.
You know, I that was such an unexpected bolt out of the blue, at least for us outside. You know, I mean, I think you guys and pretty much anybody that covers college football, with some very rare exceptions, would say that, you know, as much as we try to know what's going on and what, you know, is happening with the teams, you don't really know.
Especially in this day and age, you just don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, the only time I think that you maybe sort of get a peek inside is maybe a social media something. You know, I think that that tends to maybe be more revealing than, you know, a lot of what we can see and gather. So it's really strange in that way. So while, you know, I say that it was a unexpected thing, you know, maybe to the guys inside, it wasn't as much of a surprise. You know, I think that somebody had said after McCleskey announced he was going to transfer somebody had said that, you know, there was talk before that he had talked, you know, at least with, I think it was coaches maybe, which I assume you would probably also mention it to teammates or whatever, that you were thinking about transferring. So maybe it wasn't the surprise that we thought it was on the outside. But, you know, it's obviously left that receiver group in a much different position just in terms of depth. They lost a guy that they thought would be their for sure fifth guy, big tall guy named Patrick McCoffman before the season started, thought he would be a big time possession receiver for him, tore his ACL. He's out. They've had some other injuries along the way. Dylan Stoner, the other inside receiver who had paired with McCleskey for the last few years, he's had a hampering injury that's you know, left him not 100%. So they've really, a position that's usually had a lot of depth and a lot of talent, really kind of took some hits for different reasons. So, you know, I think that it was an impactful moment, but maybe not sort of the, you know, locker room shaking sort of thing that we might have expected. You know, and I get the feeling that this team really liked each other. Mm-hmm. You know, back in 2014, you guys will probably remember this, you know, OSU, just not very good. Texas throttled them. Everybody throttled them. And then they beat OU and Bedlam with a Tyreek Hill kick return and went to a bowl and finished 7-6. And but that year was really, you know, just ugly losses, not a good vibe. And, you know, some people have talked about, you know, that was the last time that this program struggled and how this year is similar in some ways to 2014. But I really felt like that team just was not, I mean, there just wasn't a good feeling around that 2014 team. Again, I'm saying this having just, you know, said that we don't really know, you know, as much as we would like to know about teams and chemistry and all that sort of thing, because we just don't have the insight anymore as media. But I still get the feeling like this team, there's at least a good vibe around this team. Like they feel like there's still things that can be done, improvements that can be made. And there just came a point with that team in 2014 where I think they said, you know, this is what we are. We're just not a good team. You know, we can't win. We, you know, we can't score enough points, and our defense can't, you know, isn't holding anybody in the Big 12. Nobody in the Big 12 is, you know, being held scoreless. So they were just in a conundrum, and I think you sort of sense the team sinking. Mm-hmm. And I don't sense that with this team yet. Yeah, they've got the toughest part of their schedule left, but I still sort of get the feeling like they think that they can, you know, get going and win some of these games in the final month or so of the season. So as similar as those 2 years are, they actually feel in a lot of ways really, really different.
You know, I'm going to tell you, Jenny, we're going to find out how good they are, because they got Texas at Baylor, at OU, West Virginia at the house.
We're going to know the next month.
That's arguably the toughest schedule in the country. Yeah, that is a nasty gauntlet.
And what's Gundy's temperature right now? How do you read him? Is he happy, unhappy with his situation? I know he's not happy being seventh in the Big 12 and 1-3 in conference, but how do you read him this year?
You know, he's been sort of strangely calm. In fact, you know, I almost to a fault. Like I get that when things go bad, you don't want to completely throw up your hands and toss everything out and start over. There's got to be consistency.
Sure.
You know, I understand that. But, you know, after the K-State loss, which, you know, felt like they allowed K-State a bunch of points. K-State hadn't been scoring much at all.
Right.
K-State had been giving up some points. They didn't score anything. So you sort of got this, like, this was not just a loss. This was a loss that sort of went sideways.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you sort of expect going into a bye week that there might be talk about, hey, you know, we really want to look at how can we fix what is wrong? How can we, you know, what can we tweak? What can we do different that might get this turned around? Instead, Mike Gundy was very much, you know, we're not panicking. I understand that, you know, you're not gonna run around the locker room and, you know, scream and you know, be crazy. But there comes a point where I think you have to say, listen, we keep doing what works and what our bedrock principles are. But what's the harm in saying we need to look around and figure out, you know, what can we do differently to put our guys in the best position to make plays and put our team in the best position to win games? Because, you know, it just felt very stagnant, and it was strange in that way. So I'll be interested to see after, you know, this off week, do we see some wrinkles? Do we see some different things in those areas that they've had the biggest problems with? You know, again, I understand not sort of saying, well, we've, you know, lost three or four, we're just going to change everything we do. I get that you don't do that, but there has to be a middle ground where you don't just, you know, what do they say that, you know, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. You know, that's sort of, I think there's got to be a point where you say, okay, what can we change while maintaining those bedrock principles? What can we change to make this better moving forward?
Right. It just feels like a close game to me. I don't know about you, Sid. Is all the elements with the quarterback, they're coming off a bye week, and after being embarrassed, they're 1-3 in the league, and Texas quarterback issues.
And Texas feeling a little fat and happy.
I know.
I think OSU is going to hit them in the mouth early, but I just don't know if that's going to be enough.
Yeah.
So
I think the Texas quarterback situation is interesting just for the standpoint of sort of what that does to the offense and really the whole team.
Yeah, kind of the psyche, yeah.
And the confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah, to me, that's the biggest thing because, you know, I don't know if you can necessarily say that, you know, Bushell or Sam is like lights, you know, is like heads and shoulders above the other guy.
But right.
They are.
The way that
they
Sam has played, Sam has played, he's won games, and that transcends everything, and guys get behind that. They believe in that, and they want to play with a guy like that. So, you know, the idea that maybe he's not going to be out there, what does that do to their psyche? And like you guys were talking, road game, you know, a place that can be a hornet's nest for a lot of teams. I think that's going to be really interesting to see, you know, whether Sam's, you know, available or not. Again, I'm not so sure it changes a ton game plan-wise or what they could potentially do. I just think it may change what they think they can do.
Right, that's
there.
A big part. I don't know. It just seems like they're primed for an upset or just maybe a close win where Texas pulls it out in the fourth quarter. But anyway, hey, we love having you. Appreciate it. Now that you're a family member now, we hope you'll come back often. So,
absolutely.
Always love talking to you, Jenny.
All right. Thanks, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. Jay Carr, take care.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
Jenny Carlson, chock full of information.
Entertaining.
Just one of the better people in our business.
Yeah, I know. That's one of the best parts about
her. She went through that thing with Mike Gundy, and she handled that like a pro. There are people that wouldn't have handled that very well, but she handled it like a pro. She's award-winning. She's talented. She's great. And she's one of the people where you feel good when you're in the press box with her because she brings it to the table.
She's good people.
She's good people, and she's family now.
She is family, she brings some knowledge, and I can see Tedder Cornelius. He's a 6'6 guy. He's a walk-on, former walk-on. He sat behind Mason Rudolph 3 years, but I was looking at his bio. You know, he's from the Amarillo area in Texas.
Yeah, he's Texas.
And do you see where he was all-state in football, basketball, baseball, track? I mean, this guy's an athlete.
He's an athlete. 6'6". He's an athlete.
And, you know, you could see them making changes, offensive line getting more consistent, and you know, coming off a bye, and so is Texas, but Texas has some issues of its own.
And I'm going to tell you, Taylor's he's part of the solution. He's not part of the problem.
Yeah.
He's completing 59% of his passes, 16 touchdowns, only eight picks, and his passer rating is about 149.
Well, he's missing a lot of his receivers, and she mentioned
McCleskey leaving
and Stoner having a hamstring and the other guy tearing an ACL. So they're down some weapons.
And when Gundy says he sees some Zach Robinson in Tedder Cornelius, to me that's high praise because Zach Robinson was really good.
Oh, yeah.
Really good. Well, let's switch gears, Duck.
Okay.
Let's get to a little fantasy football talk.
Do we have to?
Yeah,
why?
We do.
Oh, gosh.
Let's bring in our friend, Katerino Vasquez, our fantasy football guru for the Austin American Statesman. Here's Kat Vasquez on Second Thought. Joining us live in the dungeon, a friend of the podcast, our fantasy league guru, Cad Vasquez. We're 7 weeks in. I have a big, my Las Vegas Derelicts have a huge matchup against Cats Gatos.
Oh, so you're trying FC to pick Gatos his brain.
This weekend.
Oh, this is like espionage.
I took you both last year.
Yeah.
I took you already this year.
Uh-huh.
And Katerino, I'm coming after you this
everybody
weekend.
Takes me.
I think you're favored, too, so we'll see how that plays out.
I was favored
out.
Last week, too.
How'd that work out for you? Yeah, let's
do y'all want to hear a quick review of the story?
Everybody loves and hates
everybody
fantasy football.
Yeah, if you love fantasy football, you're going to love this story. Okay, I'm at my house. I'm in the Lazy Boy late.
You're playing Ryan
Monday
Otulo.
Night. I'm playing our court reporter, former sports writer Ryan Otulo. I'm up 22 points.
Oh, he's got in the bag.
He's got Odell Beckham.
Easy win.
And so they hit a 50-yard pass to Sterling Shepard at the end of the game.
Right, you're ahead by how much? You're ahead by how much?
I can't eat a touchdown. Right. They can throw to him three more times, but as long as he doesn't score a touchdown, I win.
Okay.
Eli Manning can't get into the end zone
on
two quarterback sneaks. Y'all watch the game.
Oh, yeah. And then what happens?
He throws to Odell Beckham. Touchdown, 4 seconds to go, and I hear words coming out of my mouth that sailors would be aghast.
And you lose by two.
And I lose 112 to 110, and I start throwing things.
What did you throw?
In my house, I threw my remote control. I threw my $800 iPhone 8.
Smart. It's very smart.
I threw an empty bottle of water and a pair of socks. And I threw most of them at the direction of a grandfather clock in my living room that hasn't worked in 8 years.
I think you got a gambling problem.
And so I have a losing problem. And so I get up and I'm still cussing. I am infuriated
because
I've never lost like that before. I'm going to be 5-2 for the first time in this league in 10 years.
That's painful.
And it's really painful. And then people that do this know it's competitive. I'm looking, before I go to bed, I'm looking for the remote and I can't find it. And I go, is it over by that freaking clock? And the clock's kind of taunting me. I hate it. I hate the clock. It's behind the clock. I grab it. I turn off the TV. I'm getting ready to walk up the stairs, and I hear tick tock.
No, it is taunting you.
Tick-tock. That clock hasn't worked in, I'm telling you, 8 years. And now it's keeping great time.
So it was a good
day
then.
And all it took
was
a 112 to 110 loss to Altulo.
All's well that ends well.
But my Vegas Derelicts are down, but we're not out. We're 4-3, and we're coming after Cat.
And Cat's not down in that. Cat's got one of the best teams.
He does.
This is a big showdown between you guys.
This should be a good one for sure.
So anyway, let's get right into the. We're past the first half now. Pat Mahomes is like the fantasy MVP. Is he the biggest surprise of the first half fantasy season?
I wouldn't call him a surprise. It's a surprise that he's at the top. But I think a lot of people saw this coming, especially with the weapons they have in Kansas City. If Alex Smith could do what he did last year with Andy Reid running things and guys like Tyreek Hill, Kareem Hunt, and Travis Kelce, of course, then a guy who's got a bigger arm, athletic, can throw left-handed, he's going to probably...
Yeah. Throw left-handed, you're right.
He's going to do better. So, I mean, it wasn't a surprise that he's in the top, you know, echelon of quarterbacks in fantasy, but to be the number one guy, that's a little surprising.
And if you were watching them the other night, a couple of Mondays ago, they were on television. It's the Patriots. Collinsworth was saying that Andy Reid last year, the Chiefs were rolling last year, and he was really considering taking Alex Smith out of the starting lineup because of what he kept seeing in practice.
He knew.
Pat Mahomes was better.
He knew.
Yeah. But you're rolling, and you have a veteran quarterback, so you can't bring in this kid just because you see him lighten it up in practice. But they're not surprised that he's doing this.
Oh, hey, if you look at all the what they went through on draft, just not draft night, but draft months leading up to it, they positioned themselves. They targeted Patrick Mahomes, and boy, he's been fun to watch, I'm telling you. And Alex Smith must have been crying all the way to Washington, you know, to leave those weapons behind. So, aside from Mahomes, who would you say is the biggest surprise?
Surprise, I would say it's tough because I think there's guys like James Conner, who has
Oh my God, he's been great.
He's been awesome. Mm-hmm. It's just it's one of those things where when is the other shoe going to drop?
Yeah,
when
right place, right time.
When is Le'Veon still not back?
Is he coming back? What do you think?
I was talking to Seth the other day about this, and I just don't know.
He doesn't want to be a Steeler next year, so he's got to come back.
He has to do it.
Yeah,
but he cannot be a Steeler and not come back.
What do you mean? He won't get any credit for this season.
Well, I know he won't get any credit, but he might do it.
He's got to come back to Pittsburgh again. He wants out of there, dog. He's got to leave.
Well, they've got to trade him or something.
What can you trade him for?
I don't think you can at this.
I mean, they're asking for a first rounder. Who's going to give up a first rounder?
You give up a first rounder for Amari Cooper.
For six games, though?
The Dallas Cowboys.
I wouldn't give up a first rounder for 30 games of Amari Cooper. Come on. He's on my team.
All right. Dive right into that. Amari Cooper. How does that affect him and the Cowboys offense?
I think more than anything, it's probably going to affect people like Dak Prescott and Zeke Elliott more, because you at least have a guy who has been a Pro Bowler out there instead of a decent-looking rookie and a bunch of guys who just haven't gotten it done all season. So,
why are you hating on Cole Beasley?
No, I love Cole Beasley. He's a great PPR guy, but he's just not going to be that number one receiver that you need crunch time. I mean, he does make catches in
crunch
time.
He's not going to go for 120 and two touchdowns.
Sure.
He's never going to stretch the field.
His ceiling is like 78 yards and maybe two touchdowns.
But would you advise people to pick up Cooper if he was available or trade for him? Or?
You know, I don't think you want to trade for him with anything of value. I think you want to, maybe if you're working a package deal where he's a part of it, but I don't think you could trade up something that you already know is a valuable asset on your team away for what is essentially almost like a lottery ticket. You just don't know with him.
Why hadn't he been better with Oakland?
I think he's a person who gets in his own head, number one. Number two, I don't know that they've ever tried to. They kept coming talking about they're going to feature him, Gruden, beginning of the year, and then he has three games with one target. And you can't tell me he's not open on some of those. And Derek Carr has been really bad.
He has.
Derek Carr is bad.
I mean, he started crying. What in happened? Seattle. He got sacked and started crying.
Was it 2 years ago that people were asking, wondering if he was elite? Or was it 3 years ago?
I think it was two years ago. Where he was getting some MVP love.
He's on your team, isn't he, Cedric?
He was. Yeah. I got rid of him.
I don't know what happened to him.
Yeah, and, you know, Gruden said this week he's not going to trade him, but I would.
That's
a fire sale. Anybody would take him. Trade him to the Cowboys.
Jacksonville, maybe?
Let me ask you a question about Amari Cooper. Do you think there's another team in the league that would give up a first rounder?
No, I don't think so.
No,
I don't either.
I do not. I think they improved their receiver with Amari Cooper.
The price is too high.
But I think they, and I told Caterino this when we were talking yesterday, I go, Cat, they could have went and got Devontae Parker from the Dolphins.
Oh, they should have tried for Jarvis Landry.
For a third round.
Yeah. Go get Landry in the offseason something. They could have had Calvin Ridley, but they wanted Van Der Esch.
Yeah, they're going to make a move this offseason. I wonder
if they don't really look at how this looks from the outside, because this is pretty much basically admitting that, we were wrong in the offseason. We didn't realize that we could go without a number one type
guy. Well, you know, they could have gotten Ridley and others, but they wanted Van Der Esch because they're worried about Sean Lee's health.
Can't blame him.
Right. Again.
So, can't blame him.
That was a big need, both of them.
For sure.
So, no, I agree with that. The other thing I've read is that the reason for the trade is they're not sure, they're not sold on Dak Prescott. Like, how can we evaluate him with no weapons?
Yeah,
so
right.
Let's give him a weapon and let's try to make that evaluation, because, boy, they're in limbo right now.
Yeah, they are. I've got a huge question for Kat.
Okay.
A really good friend of
this
mine.
This isn't about our matchup.
No.
Don't trust him.
I'm coming after you, Kat. It's not about that. A really good friend of mine who sits close by is 2-5 in the Office Football League. He's the most senior member of the newsroom of the sports department.
That narrows
of the
it down
league.
A little bit.
He's in this room.
Wonder who that is.
He's had horrific running back issues. Shady McCoy hasn't gotten on track, and one Leonard Fournette has some soft tissue issues with those hammies. Do you think Fournette will be a guy at any point of the season, and would you advise Kirk Bowles and his son Tyler, the owners of the Sitting Ducks, to just cut bait with Fournette and try to get something else in that running back position?
At 2-5, you probably can. But the thing is, I feel like he's going to come back at some point, and you're going to need him late. But again,
need him
if you're
for
2-5, you got exactly. Yeah, you might as well cut bait. Or what you can do is trade him to somebody who possibly needs to shore up that position. You get more stuff back, possibly a keeper eligible.
I would trade him yesterday if somebody brings me a good offer.
What did you pay for him in our $50
cap? It's
like
$9.10. I was a keeper. We got to give a $2 raise to our keepers. Right. We get to keep two players, and so he's $9.10.
That's a good keeper price.
And,
it looked like
it's been horrible. He's played like a quarter and a half out of eight weeks.
And I'm going to tell you, man, the way he ran over the Pittsburgh Steelers in that playoff game, I was like, man, you are set at running back, because that guy was. He looked like Earl Campbell in that game, big and fast.
And then, like you said, Shady hadn't done anything either, and got a concussion. And he never gets the ball, and it's a terrible situation.
That's
I was hoping
surprising.
He might get traded to Philly. That didn't happen.
Right.
So, you know, that running back position has killed me again. It usually does.
What happens when you end up with those kinds of players? It's almost like it's almost impossible to move them. And
it is.
You really can't get.
And if you cut him just for space, somebody else is going to pick him up for a dollar.
I don't think you should worry about that. Once you cut bait,
if you're 2-5
move on,
in a league like ours where we only have two keepers, then you might as well try to get it in the playoffs somehow.
Yeah.
You got to look at guys that you got to look at teams where they have a fragile or injury prone.
Make me an offer,
starting
dude.
Running back.
Yeah,
target that.
Right, you know. Now, if I cut him next week, wouldn't he be the first player taken?
Of course,
for sure. Yeah.
That'll
happen for sure.
That's the dilemma that you fight.
Yeah.
You know, another guy is David Johnson.
Oh yeah,
he plays for the FC Gatos.
Yes, he
for
does.
Sure. Yeah,
what
he
would
does.
You tell other David Johnson owners? What to expect on David Johnson?
What to expect is more, a lot more touches, I think, since they've changed their offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
He's been disappointing, but I will say this. I just looked this up. He's still a running back one in our one-point-per-two reception league.
Wow.
So he's the running back 12 in our league. So over the course, he'll get the goal line touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's been kind of keeping him above water is he'll score one almost every game. Last week was his first kind of dud game where I think he had 7 points. So and not a lot of rushing yards, and he didn't score. So that's a bad game. Seven points is an okay game for a mediocre player, but that's terrible for David Johnson. And you were talking about paying I paid $16.10 for David Johnson.
Didn't you win the league 2 years ago, Ketter?
No, I didn't win the league.
You've never won the league with David Johnson?
What I did was I led the league in points, and you know the roster breakdown where you see your record had you played everybody every week?
Oh, yeah.
I think I had over 100 wins and maybe 40 losses.
And you just ran into the wrong team.
Yeah, I just ran into the wrong team to the playoffs. It was a tough year, especially that team was pretty stacked, but... But yeah, I think what you do with him is you sit on, you keep him, you just wait because things are about to change. Bide your time. Maybe Rosen gets a little better. Maybe he gets a better chemistry with his receivers there, and that opens things up a little. Maybe they throw him the ball every once in a while.
They haven't.
I was watching some of their games Sunday, and they lined him up in the slot, and he ran a little quick slant. He looks like a wide receiver.
Oh, yeah.
He
can do it all.
Excellent.
And he can run all day.
He's a horse.
Yeah. He just needs to get it. And what they need to do is play him like the Giants play Saquon Barkley in New York. Anytime he could dump it off to him, he'll get yards. He'll hand it to him as you would normally. And
so, speaking of Saquon Barkley, is he the fantasy rookie of the year?
Oh, for sure.
Who else is in that mix? The quarterbacks, Darnold has come back to earth a little bit.
He had 3 picks last week.
Anybody else that would be up there for rookie of the year?
Ridley's made a little bit of noise.
I think
Ridley's doing well, but I don't think it's going to be close in terms of who's going to be the most productive rookie. Barkley just gets too many touches to not be productive, and he's just the monster.
And Eli's checked down Charlie now.
For sure.
He is dumping it off to him.
And that helps you. If they make a quarterback change, I don't know that they will.
But this is it for Eli.
Right. Yeah. If they did, then maybe next year things will change a little bit for Barkley. But this year he's just so solid.
Eli's dead to me. He's dead.
He's dead to everybody.
Get in the end zone.
Penalty the Giants.
I'm 5-2. Get your butt in the end zone, man. You're at the 1 foot line.
Yeah.
Who else? Who else? Disgusting. Who else would you say, boy, look out the second half of the season? That anybody that's really going to make a charge.
You know, I think one guy who finally broke out for me this week, Kerryon Johnson for the Lions.
Nice.
Former Auburn running back.
Big long run. I was watching.
Yeah.
For sure. This was his second 100-yard rushing game this season, and the Lions hadn't had one 100-yard rushing game since.
In years.
In years.
Yeah. Years, yeah.
I didn't look it up, but I really thought it was Reggie Bush that did the last time.
I think it may have been Theo Riddick. I don't know.
I don't know. He's
I don't remember.
They never run the ball. They never run it. But I like him and Nick Chubb.
Nick Chubb.
Now that Carlos Hyde is out of
that's
Cleveland.
That's a good one. That's, man, that's a good one.
That's a nice. It's very possible that he could. I mean, you've already seen he can make big plays. Yeah. So,
he's faster than I thought he'd be on this level.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I always knew
Sony
Michel was way faster than him at Georgia. But Nick Chubb has had a couple of long runs this season.
Right.
He's looked fast.
Besides, as far as MVP, besides Mahomes, who would you say are maybe two or three others that MVP, maybe not right now, but by the end of the year, they'll be in that fantasy MVP mix?
You know, I think for sure, Todd Gurley, because he's already he's always going to be.
Gosh, I wonder who's got him.
Hard to be humble. I'm 4-3 with Gurley, so I'm not great.
But three losses with Gurley?
Huh?
Three losses with Gurley?
Two. I'm 4-3.
Oh, you are?
I've lost three in a row.
That is bad.
I'm telling you, I should have been 5-2.
Wow, wow.
But I also gave up. I also scored 159 points and got beat.
Yeah. Wow, that is a tough beat.
So Todd Gurley, Mahomes, who else you got?
14 touchdowns. Over.
Manny, 14 about Manny?
Touchdowns.
What about Manny Ice?
That
he's playing great.
I was about to bring him up. Yeah, it's one of those things where you don't know why the record is what it is. Well, maybe you do, but.
You can't stop anybody, can
But, yeah, exactly. But it's not. It's not his fault. You know, he's putting up a lot of numbers. I think he's leading the league in passing yardage.
Has to be.
I think so.
Freeman's been hurt all year.
Yeah, that's
tough. I have him in my other league, and I'm loving life over there.
Are you?
Because I'm actually 5-2 in that league.
Yes. Yeah, the other thing that's hurt me is Antonio Brown hasn't been Antonio Brown.
He's not even the best receiver on his own team.
Juju Smith-Schuster, I love him.
He's great, but it's so weird because that's probably going to be another player that ends up getting – better run towards the second half just because he's a veteran and he's going to be is going to make it a point that he wants to get the ball more
and if Le'Veon Bell comes back they're not going to be always able to keep both safeties back and guard against Antonio
Brown.
That's such
a winnable division.
One of those guys is going to get some looks and I really think I mean I'm not trying to blow you up here cuz I know you're struggling. I think Antonio Brown will be Antonio Brown by the end of the season. I believe that.
Probably be too late for me. But anybody else could be making a great second half charge? You mentioned Kerryon Johnson, which would be a good one.
A second half charge? Well, here's somebody you should make sure that maybe possibly target trading. Guys like Emmanuel Sanders, he's had
a pretty
Denver's
good year,
offense.
Isn't he?
He's been
a
wonderful.
Really
Demaryius Thomas hadn't done much.
They're trying to trade him.
Yeah.
He already has 300-yard games this season, and Case Keenum is his quarterback.
Wow.
I mean, that's kind of special when you can be that kind of guy.
Yeah.
And I don't know. He's just one of those guys you got to keep an eye on. Another guy who I just got to mention this guy, as you were talking about possible MVPs, Adam Thielen. I mean,
love him.
He's just.
God, Rick Cantu.
Love him.
Rick Cantu, for some reason, got it in his head. I asked him, I go, you know, he outbid me for Adam Thielen.
I was bidding
and
against
sitting
you,
there,
too.
I'm sitting there going, why is Rick Cantu? Does Rick even know who Adam Thielen is? and he just kept bidding me up, and I just finally said, I didn't have the money to fight him because I spent most of my money on Gurley.
Right.
And he's had 7 straight 100-yard games to start the season. And if I had that guy on my team to go with Todd Gurley and Kirk Cousins, I might be undefeated. And Mike Evans.
I might be undefeated
because he built him up to $9 and I'm like, and he had this look on his face like, I'll
he wasn't going to stop.
And we've been in
he wasn't gonna stop.
Auctions with Rick where he's, he's gone the limit. So
yeah.
That's my biggest regret of this draft is that I didn't try to land Adam Thielen.
Well, the last question I have is that who's going to win our league?
Ooh, that's a good one. The Real American Heroes, but
that's Danny Davis.
Danny Davis.
He's got a very strong team.
Easy does it.
With former Statesman reporters Jason Embry and Dan Zier. They're 6-1 along
they're
with
loaded.
Danny.
They're loaded.
And they can't afford injuries though. They're pretty top heavy.
And then Bayou Ballers, Joe Huntsberry.
Yeah.
Oh, he's very good.
Very good.
He may be winning the points title.
So. Oh, yeah. I like my team. For the first time in forever, yeah. I like my team too, Seth. But I don't think that I'm in that category. I'm gonna have to make a move.
I think you're okay.
Have to make a move. If I get an RB2, if Golden Tate wakes up, I think I'll be okay.
I'll trade you Leonard Fournette. He'll put you over the top.
Yeah, I'll give you my answer off the air.
I might take Leonard Fournette.
Okay, I want to hear all trade offers after this show. So, hey, thanks for being with us, buddy. This is always entertaining.
Oh, for sure.
Lots of fun.
That will do it for episode 115 of On Second Thought. We have to thank our guests, Jenny Carlson of the Oklahoman, and our very own Kat Vasquez, our Fantasy League expert. For The Duck, I'm Cedric Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.